Welcome to Work From Your Happy Place, the podcast that equips you with the tools, know-how, and motivation to live your dreams and find your happy place. Be sure to sign up for our free weekly newsletter for a recap of the week's guests and a preview of what's in store. To sign up, simply text the word happy place with no space to 33444. Now, it's my pleasure to introduce the host of Work From Your Happy Place, Belinda Ellsworth.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Work From Your Happy Place, our artist edition. I'm so excited to be interviewing our guest today, Lauren Ritchie. Lauren has been studying, researching, and educating dancers on the physical, emotional, and mental intricacies of dance. She has made it her life's work to support dancers to be their best mind, body, and spirit. Recognizing the lack of mental skills training in dance, Lauren has created programs and exercises dedicated to educating and empowering dancers' mental health and fitness to optimize their training. From her MED in coaching studies to a BA in professional communications to multiple yoga certifications and accredited art and science of coaching certification, Lauren has a unique blend of education and resources that offer a holistic training approach for dancers. It is my pleasure to welcome Lauren to our show today.
Thank you so much for having me. That bio is a mouthful, I know.
I know, I was like, okay, I can get through this fast. And then I tangled up my words a bit, but it was great. It's awesome. So it gives our listeners a little bit of background on you. But why don't you just fill in the gaps of that bio and just get real with everybody and give us a little bit about your background and history, and then that journey, like what got you to doing exactly what you do today?
Absolutely. Well, I was a competitive dancer my whole life. So since I was the age of 3, I was training in ballet and jazz and lyrical contemporary, all the things in a competitive studio environment. And I was really fortunate to have a healthy training facility and really wonderful teachers and educators through that. But it was when I meant to, or when I went to make the transition from high school competitive culture to the professional world of dance that I really, really struggled. And it wasn't about my body. It wasn't any kind of physical training. And it wasn't about artistry, because we know that what exists within us is always ours and that artistic voice. But it was all mental. And I started to crumble. And it was so jarring to me how different the competitive world was versus the professional world. And so I really had to start this journey of what is mental wellness, mental well-being, mostly because I was having an athletic identity crisis and it had resulted in an eating disorder and anxiety and depression, all of which I had never really navigated before. So that's what started my personal work into mental skills training. And simultaneously, I found myself starting to teach young dancers and recognizing all of the ways in which the dance studio and really this art form naturally leans towards mental exploration and mental health. So that was the start of a really long, winding, curious process of bringing both that mental well-being and also like how to train high performance in a healthy way. That's essentially what I've spent the last 20 years doing for myself and for the dancers and the dance educators now that I work with.
Oh, that is great. I think it is something that's clearly always existed, like you're saying, for 20 years, but it is now becoming more easily talked about, I think, and people are starting to recognize the significance and that there needs to be more training in this area.
Absolutely. It's undeniable now, the amount that we can share our stories on social media and podcasts and through online platforms. It's been seen time and time again that there can be a pendulum that swings way too far when it comes to attaching self-worth to athletic or artistic endeavors. And I feel really grateful to be here in a time where so many of these conversations and tools are accessible. And so it's been a wonderful, evolving, and growing journey. that I feel like has only just begun.
Wow. I would have to agree. So what have you identified as sort of like the top things that like artists, specifically dancers, struggle with in this particular area of sort of this, you know, mindset versus the skill sets that they have?
Yeah. Because dance, and I'll say competitive dance in particular, is what they would call early sports specialization, meaning that we go into this art form young and we sort of pick it very early on. So if this becomes our thing, we go all in. You can be at the studio 5 days a week when you're 8 years old, sort of like gymnastics or figure skating. And what inevitably happens is that dance becomes part of our identity as to who we are. And at that young age, we very much can make associations around what is valuable and what makes us valuable connected to this expression. And it's a little trickier than sport because sport can have measurements to it, you know, how many goals you get, how high you can jump. You know, volleyball players will actually measure that. You know, swimming, you can time everything. But dance has the real artistic component that isn't measurable. And so it is part of who we are. It is not something that we only do. And so there's this beautiful weaving of who we are and what we do. And yet that can also make it really complicated when perhaps you don't want to dance anymore. Or like I experienced, my job was dependent on proving that I was worthy. And so the audition experience is very challenging when it comes to that rejection. And mm-hmm. when people say, don't take the rejection personally, oh, it feels personal. It's it feels pretty deep. So there's absolutely that component of worthiness. And there's also just the truth of social media and comparison. When I was training, all I had really was the people in my studio. And when we went to competition, we would see the people in our city. But now kids at such a young age, they're very exposed to excellence across the world. And it can become a little defeating if that's your only definition of success, or if your mental framework is that, well, I'm not that person, or I'm not going to be able to do that, so why try, right? So we're always navigating that internal check-in and our own definitions of success and artistry and all of those beautiful things. But I would say those are two of the big ones. Of course, recently, I also hear a lot around stress and expectations. Our teenagers who are training at dance at a really high level also tend to approach school with that same zest. and expectations are invisible. And yet they can feel really heavy. So I often find myself in those conversations as well.
It's tough for young kids right now that are really trying to pursue theater or dance or drama as a career. It's very competitive, and it is very, the onus is on them and them alone. And it's challenging.
Yeah. I have a lot of compassion for this process.
Yeah, my daughter is in the throes of auditioning for musical theater programs right now. She's a senior. And so the audition process and application process is daunting, to absolutely say the least.
Yeah, so you understand this in real time. you're getting all of the waves of vulnerability and courage and mental processing right in your own home.
We indeed are. it's two parts. So like, she's a pretty confident girl, and yet there is still this such huge high competition. Like an article just came out that said you're 10 times greater chance of getting into Harvard than getting into a musical theater program at one of the top schools. Like the percentages are low just based on the numbers that they take. And I'm like, you know what? You're going to go where you're meant to be. You just have to do your best. But it's just a lot of preparation. And then you've got everyone outside of that that doesn't understand the process going, so where do you want to go to school? It's like, it doesn't matter where I want to go to school. It's where I'm accepted. You know, it's where I pass all the check marks. It's just tough.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So let's talk about what's one of your greatest accomplishments that you've had throughout your career?
Yeah, these are always fascinating questions for me to go into and reflect upon. And that is one of my favorite things to do, really, is just to get curious about my own stories and my own framework. But I always come back to personal resilience. Being an artist or doing any kind of projects and artistic endeavors requires a great amount of courage and resilience. And so an overarching theme in my career and my life would be that. I think the thing that actually feels like the most accomplishment today is when I quit and walked away from my marketing job. I had gone full blown into pencil skirts and high heels. I always taught. I always did dance in the evenings or on the side, but I thought there was this element of, you know, time to sort of grow up or at least get a certain kind of paycheck or be a part of a certain kind of organization. Mm-hmm. And I remember just being so unhappy. My soul was crying. And at times I was crying. And it took a lot of courage to step away from that certainty. And yet that was probably the best thing that I could have done. And so I feel like it's an accomplishment because it felt very countercultural.
Absolutely. I mean, a lot of people will say, okay, so like, what is your backup or when are you going to get a real job? And you hear that so much that you start to believe that that is an important piece of, like, you're right, of society to be a part of, when then you realize that this isn't my purpose.
Yeah. And I do think that if we're really tuning in, we know there's something in our DNA that is just firing, saying, not this, not this. And I have taken every experience as an opportunity to check in and go, okay, is this lighting me up? Or is this actually shrinking me or whispering that not this? And that's been a beautiful compass for me throughout my career.
Oh, that's great. So do you have a favorite memorable performance or a project that you've been part of?
I'm great with many, but the one that comes actually most recently is because of a project I'm working on now. But I was invited to be a part of a charity event called Reassembly, and it was here in Calgary, and it was on Mental Health Day, World Mental Health Day. And I actually got to hire one of my past students, and we performed together. And it was a great night of local singers, spoken word poetry, models, fashion designers, interior designers, and we were raising money for a center that's being built here in Calgary. And then 2 years later, 3 years later, that student came back and said, could we do something? Could we create some kind of fundraising initiative to continue on the ripple that little rock caused, that event caused? And so that's what we've been working on recently. And it just feels like the most nourishing performance because it was me performing with somebody that I trained. We were doing it to a local spoken word poet. And then 3 years later, we're still here and we're still exploring.
Wow, that's great. And it's fun that you get to sort of explore both elements of what you're doing. So that's pretty awesome. In fact, really, as an individual on the show, you work with artists, you have been an artist, but you really have sort of the best of both in that you're coaching and teaching and working with people in the area of mental health makes you just really a strong entrepreneur as well. So you're working the business side, both in the artistic side of what you do. So that's got to be interesting navigating those two because they're both like so different sides of your brain.
Yes, absolutely.
And so how do you do your best to navigate that?
I guess that's it. As I commit to navigating it, understanding that both can actually support each initiative or each project mm-hmm. or each skill set. I definitely challenge myself every day to recognizing that this is a bit of a negotiation at times, and that there isn't a solid path in the artistic process. So sometimes you can have the most wonderful business plans and strategies and approaches, but when you're working within your artistic capabilities, there's not always a plan and it's not an equation. So really it's been recognizing old patterns, old plans, old strategies, while actually using that creative thinking and that artistic approach, because even the landscape of business today wasn't what it was a year ago, 2 years ago, 3 years ago. And so I think that having the ability for creativity and finding new solutions and playful ways to navigate through business has been just nothing but opportunity.
Absolutely. So for a lot of our artists especially, but even entrepreneurs, they had to completely reinvent themselves during this pandemic. And so in what new things did you discover about yourself and in ways to still be able to reach your audience during that time? What were some of the things that were challenging for you during that time?
Oh my goodness. Well, we're still sort of navigating and in it, but
yep.
I mean, unbelievable in the best way possible and the worst way possible. So when it comes to how I used the pandemic to nudge me in different directions, it was absolutely the thing that pushed me to do my mental skills teacher training online and be able to open it up to dance teachers throughout the world. So that I'm not sure that would have happened this quickly had it not been for that. And mm-hmm. what that allowed me to do, really, my master's in education is in coaching studies, and I focused on mental skills training for dancers. And at the end, I had a knowledge translation project, which essentially was a book for dance teachers on how to bring mental skills training into their studios. And I got to take that and action it immediately and share it. And that has been one of the best projects and the biggest gifts in my career. I very much struggled with what it means to be a dance teacher through the pandemic, because mm-hmm. I've taught for 20 years and this was not what I had trained for. This is not what brings me joy, to be on Zoom for 6 hours, to feel the hearts just in absolute pain of the teenagers and the kids who are trying to figure out how to do a pirouette on carpet in their basement with a low ceiling. Like, it was disastrous. It was not good for mental health for the teachers or the students. And so that one was really tricky, because I think I'm still navigating parts of that. So much of my joy was rooted in the studio and being with people and the creative process and all of that. But that one, I always trust, you know, will return in whatever form that is. But yeah, I think that the mental skills teacher training was a huge one. I still did the dance podcast through part of the pandemic, and just having the community connect through conversation offered so much inspiration and insight, because again, you are connecting with people around the world mm-hmm. and everyone is in the same storm, but a different boat. And so that was a real blessing as well.
Yeah. I do think it made people discover things about themselves that they didn't know. And then it also pushed people that were kind of like, I know I need to go in this direction. It just really sped the whole process up for a lot of people, which was a good thing.
Yeah. And I think when I look at how I participate online and in business and in artistry, for me, I can always come back to the truth that it's about authenticity and the willingness to be vulnerable and share what we're going through and mm-hmm. that was part of the podcast. I'm sure you feel that as well. You get to share other people's stories and voices and perspectives. Mm-hmm. And it was needed more than ever. So I'm really grateful that I had that medium, because I had already done the podcast for 4 or 5 years at that point.
That is great. I am glad that I did as well, because it was, you know, that was the main question that we asked during that time. And now I've kind of taken it off my question sheet, but people are still navigating it. It's not really completed, you know, but when it was in the throes of it, it was like, how are you navigating it? Like, what are you doing right yeah. now? Because a lot of people needed advice from other people because a lot of people just became paralyzed and you had to move forward. You know, it's really interesting for myself as a public speaker. I was speaking about 6 times a month. So every week I was traveling, and I had done that for 25 years. And to have every single speaking engagement gone, I had to deal with, okay, that's my reality. Now, what do I replace it with? And I worked really, really hard. And then I sort of convinced myself that I didn't really like being out speaking as much anymore. Like, because I didn't want to feel sorrowful for it. Do you know what I mean? Like, I didn't want to constantly feel. So I kind of convinced myself that it was okay. And then I had 2 speaking engagements, one in July and one in September, just recently. And I had some anxiety around going out. I really did. And then I got there and then I realized how much I missed it. And then I kind of like opened myself up to, okay, like, I'm going to hit the road again, but what's that going to look like? You know, like, what's my boundaries around how much I want to do? Because I actually really like being home too. And so it was a whole new thing. And then really, the rest of the world, though, isn't ready to start having conferences. And like, so there's limited speaking engagements. And so I'm sort of torn in my brain with like telling myself, do you want to do this or you don't want to do this? Is this what you're going to do or what are you going to do in place of it? It's just the oddest thing. I'm actually struggling more today than I probably did at the very beginning when I said, I got to pivot right now and figure out something else to do.
Yeah, I wholeheartedly feel that. So much of mine was also live type events. For me, I'm really challenging myself right now to live in the messy middle and that gray where mm-hmm. it's not, are you in or are you out? You know, it's much more, what could this look like? Or what does feel right now? Because I know that many of us are also, we never had the rest and recovery that is required for the kind of stress we went through. And so it can be that invitation just to say, what feels right for right now? Or mm-hmm. what's a new way that I might approach this, given I feel a little wearier or apprehensive, or, you know, for me, October was really fast. I filled my schedule up and I traveled 3 times, and that was probably three bigger trips and closer together than for the entire 2 years. And I went, oh, yeah, that was too much too fast. Okay, so let's not do that again. Okay, we're not there yet. Okay, great.
I'm with you. I did the same thing 3 weekends in a row. And I was like, all right, I need to be home. Like I had been gone every weekend of my life for the last 26 years, except for holidays. And so I just thought, I can't, this was too much. That's so funny you say that. That's exactly how I felt. I was gone those first 3 weekends in a row, the last weekend of September and first 2 weeks of October. And I'm like, man, I need a break from just being gone from my home. I felt like, I don't know, it was the weirdest thing. I missed being home.
Yeah. Rob Bell has the Robcast, and he described it perfectly, at least to what my experience has been, where at one point we thought, okay, when things start to lighten up, we're going, we're traveling, we're going to concerts, we're having parties. I can't wait to, you know, see everybody again. And then it goes on long enough, or it went on long enough to really disrupt some habits and some behaviors or, you know, expectations. And he goes, it feels more like when you come out of the really dark movie theater and it's like taking a while for your eyes to adjust. And even walking feels a little crickety because you've been sitting for so long. Like, that feels like the experience re-entering society rather than, hey, let's all just jump in and have a pool party, right? So yeah. I was like, yeah, I feel like my eyes are adjusting, my body's adjusting, and it's going to take a little bit of time.
Yeah. So let's talk a little bit about engagement with, you know, you're trying to build a following right now. And what are some ways that you feel you've been successful in doing that?
Well, it's interesting you frame it that way, because I guess there is parts that that's true. But my focus was never on building followings or numbers. Okay. For me, it's always been about connecting and sharing things that were helpful for me, bridging academia into application, the ability to find, I think, a commonality in what, and a community in what can be perceived as a very competitive industry. So that was a large part about me participating on any kind of online platform or media. And then I've always had this very innate, very natural sense to see what's needed and a willingness to lead the project. And so sometimes that has looked like week-long summer intensives for dancers that incorporate mental skills training and dancing. Other times it looks like creating a teacher retreat and bringing teachers together from across the country and creating a very safe and intimate space for professional development and personal development. And then even the podcast, the dance podcast, was created to bridge the information and the voices of those who have had a very successful dance career into the ears of aspiring professional dancers and people mm-hmm. wanting to have a healthy career. And that's mind and body. So I think that the engagement piece has always come from a wanting and a willingness to connect and share. And I do think that those that do follow me, they know what I'm about. They know mm-hmm. what I'm curious about. They know that I do my best to show up as integral and honest, no matter what room or what platform I'm on. And I understand, as a business and marketing sort of perspective, that yeah, that I don't post twice a day to get more traction and to get the algorithm on my side. And maybe that's where some of the artistry wins out over the business strategy. But if I don't have something to say, I'm not going to fill your scroll just to fill your scroll and get noticed. And that's where I think that there's also a confidence, because when people meet me, there's no proving on my end. If mm-hmm. you meet me in the grocery store or in the dance studio or on a podcast, I do my best and I like to try to remain very aligned to who I am and my values.
Very good. So what does working from your happy place mean to you?
For me, it's always been about purposeful, meaningful work. And no matter the project, no matter the medium, I know and trust that art, that any kind of connection, any kind of vulnerability and sort of the sharing of that with other humans, it makes an imprint and it makes an impact. And that is what lights me up and keeps me so content. And I feel the friction when any sort of pendulum has swung into the proving and the hustling side. It's always about human connection and purposeful, meaningful work. That is by far the happy space and place.
Oh, that's awesome. So what advice then would you give to someone starting out in the arts, especially young dancers?
I think first and foremost, finding your people and your community that support and can even offer some stability, because this can feel like a little bit of a ride when you dive into that artistic exploration and those waters, especially if you're trying to transition into a career. The people are sometimes the most important part of it all. I think there's the acceptance that art and performance and artistic qualities, performance approaches, they are subjective, right? They will always have opinions around them. And so the more that you can get curious and stay connected to your own artistic and performance-based work, the better. It's sort of that internal validation versus external validation. We mm-hmm. understand that the external is part of viewing any kind of art or listening to any art or seeing it. But the job of an artist as you explore this career is to continually come back to personal definitions of success, personal definitions of failure, detachment from outcome or people's opinions. And that's not to say we aren't always seeking feedback and mentorship from those that we appreciate and respect. But in a world of social media where there's so many voices, I mean, it's being very mindful of who you're actually listening to. So I think that those are the big pieces. The truth, whether it's in an artistic endeavor or a business endeavor or wherever you go, is that relationships will be one of the biggest drivers as to any opportunities or experiences that we are gifted and encounter. So prioritizing relationships and being very mindful of how you show up in those relationships, that authenticity, that kindness, that generosity, I truly believe it comes back tenfold and it eventually mm-hmm. becomes your career.
You know, it's so true. And I think that's the piece of it that takes or can take a long time for artists to understand, but it will get you further. Kindness, how easy you are to work with, how easy you are to follow directions, how much you care about the other people in the room. Do you know what I mean? Or get along with, all those things matter. In most times, they matter, maybe not getting that first gig, but they will matter getting a second and a third and a fourth, because your reputation always does follow you as well.
Absolutely. When I talk to people who cast and hire dancers, I mean, I think it was Kelly Kono who said, you want to be able to hang out with them, you know, because so much of film and television is downtime and you're just quite literally hanging out waiting for you to be called to set. And so there's an element of being just a really great person and having mm-hmm. interests and curiosities outside of your work, because those are the conversations that are fun as you sit and you hang. So yeah, I 100% agree, and I am reminded and very grateful to my mom who role modeled that for me. She's a dental hygienist. There is no agenda or entrepreneurialism or artistry in her path, but she showed me what it was to be kind, to find mm-hmm. commonality, to open space for people to share. I will forever be grateful that that is my mother.
I'd like to believe I've imparted that on my children as well. I'd like to believe that. I'm told that, so I'm happy that I believe I've done that well. So that's one of those things you're like, yeah, I think I did that well.
Even the fact that you are opening spaces in the podcast for people to share their stories, you are making connections. I mean, that is absolutely role modeling 101.
Oh, thank you so much. So what new and exciting things are you working on right now, Lauren, that you'd like our audience to know about? And then how can they find you?
Well, they are welcome to find me on Instagram at Lauren_M_Ritchie. That is the platform that I play most on. I feel like I can do one platform well. So that's the one I chose for now. Things that are coming up. Well, I'm doing the fundraising initiative for the Calgary Mental Health Center for Adolescents and Children, and that's buildinghopeab.ca. So that's the thing that's coming up really soon. And besides that, most of my work is workshops, presentations, coming in and working with companies or organizations to help them bring in some of these mental well-being and mental resilience strategies and tools. So that's all at withlauren.ca.
Perfect. Well, Lauren, thank you so much for sharing your wisdom and insights with our audience today. I certainly loved our interview. So thank you for your time.
Thank you, Belinda. It's been an absolute honor.
And to all of our listeners out there, thanks for joining us. We know your time is valuable and we appreciate you spending it with us. If you enjoyed the podcast today, rate and review it. We always appreciate that. And don't forget to share us with a friend. Let other people know about all the wonderful things that they can learn at work from your happy place. And until next time, I hope you continue to live your best life working from your happy place. Thanks, everyone, and we will see you again soon.
Thanks for joining us at Work From Your Happy Place. If you like what you hear, please share it with your friends and be sure to rate and review us on iTunes or Stitcher. For a free gift on finding your own happy place, please visit workfromyourhappyplace.com and click on the free audio button. Thanks again for listening.